This is the Negative Splits Podcast.
Welcome to the Negative Splits Podcast. We are joined today by the 2018, spoiler alert, Black Canyon 100K winner. And he's punched his golden ticket to Western States. We are joined by, for a second time on the show, Tim Frericks. What's going on, man?
Hey, not much, Bill. Thanks so much for having me back on the show. It's good to be back.
Let's talk about leading up to the race. This was a big one because this was your chance to get into Western States. How did training go? Talk to us about your training in terms of mileage and what you peaked at and how things were feeling for you.
Yeah, no. So I came off North Face last November and took a little bit of a down period there, a couple weeks off, started training again. And then, early to mid January, it felt like I was firing on all cylinders. I wish the race had been then. I had some of my best Grand Canyon runs during that time. Honestly, felt like I was had even kind of made a breakthrough past my fitness level going into North Face, and so I was pretty excited. But yeah, for whatever reason, I don't know. I've just had a lot of success recently on these shorter training blocks. And kind of going into races, erring on the side of being, you know, a little bit, not quite as fit. And I like being on that side rather than kind of hanging on to fitness. And so I had a fall in the Grand Canyon and, just some, a lack of sleep that week because I got in really late after this fall and kind of was working a lot that week. So sometime around mid January, about a month prior to the race, things just started not feeling quite as good. I think I was a little behind on recovery, but being completely honest, it was kind of a little bit of a rough block here coming on to the end. So, but I peaked at about 100 miles a week. That's pretty typical for me. And it was a little longer block than usual, 9 or 10 weeks probably. So I don't know. I knew going into the race that it was going to be a tough one just because my legs kind of were starting to feel flat on a lot of my runs and just seemed like I was in a bit of a hole recovery wise. But I knew what my body, wasn't going to be able to do physically. I was going to try and make up for mentally. And it was a good day for me in that regard, just kind of battling through, it sucks to not feel good, but all things considered, I was pretty happy with how it went and kind of just pushing through when you feel pretty terrible. So
I'm interested to hear about that, stretch in January before the fall where things were going really good and you felt like you had another breakthrough in fitness. Did you feel like you had to hold yourself back, or were you gonna kind of ride that wave going into February and into the race?
I definitely was trying to hold back a little bit. I ran my fastest ever from the river in the Grand Canyon up to the rim on the South Kaibab Trail. I did in 65 minutes, and that's just quite a bit faster than I've ever done before. Or even during the rim to rim, I think I was 69, and then my best had been I think 68 before that. So I kind of did that, and that kind of surprised me just because it was really early. I'd had a couple other good runs, but that was kind of when things really started clicking. And so I kind of made a mental note, just kind of ease up. We've got 5 weeks or something till race day. And so I tried to, but then just some musculoskeletal stuff falling in the Grand Canyon. I hadn't fallen before and banged up my knee. The knee was fine, but I think I ended up compensating on my other leg and just had some post-tib issues, calf issues, and just didn't feel smooth. And each run was kind of painful, to be honest. So I think that just kind of is where things kind of went awry. I took a lot away from this training block and this race and just knowing that, it all compounds on itself and for future races. So I'm happy with the training I was able to get in and just knowing that there is that fitness in there, from back in January. I want to rest up now and then kind of tap back into that for this summer. So
definitely. Did that fall freak you out a little bit afterwards in terms of, did you feel tentative at all in future runs at the Canyon?
The fall wasn't bad itself. I was pretty bloodied up, but more than anything, it just kind of freaked me out into like, you know, just respecting the Canyon and kind of being safer, you know. I hate to admit, but I was on my own on this run. I was alone down there and it was getting dark, and I was fine as far as water and all that stuff goes, but you got to be careful in these remote places and just you know, not get too complacent, I think, with preparation. So it did. It's like, you know, the buddy system works. Take a friend.
I follow you on Strava, Tim, and I noticed that your big weeks were 100.2. Was that where you peaked at?
Yeah, 100 is about where I peaked at. I since I've been doing the full-time nursing and running thing, 100 has been kind of my sweet spot. I would have liked to stay up a little higher, but I was telling Bill earlier, like I had a fall in Green Canyon, and just had some injury issues, honestly. Nothing that was like keeping me from training completely, but just some little things that kind of held me back. And I would like to get up in, you know, a little bit over 100 and have a few more of those big weeks in each training block than I did this time. But yeah, I mean, you know, it doesn't always go as, you know, as it does, as you want it to on paper. So
you talked about your training in the Canyon and with so many different challenges you have there in terms of, you know, just the terrain and everything like that.
Yeah.
Do you train by feel a lot of times, or are you pretty structured with workouts?
No, yeah, a lot of it's by feel. Honestly, it's kind of why I like doing the trail run and stuff. Is it's a little more, at least the way we do it. You know, me and my friends here in Flag, like it's a lot of our stuff is a little less structured. You know, workout days, a lot of the time are big pushes up the climbs in the Grand Canyon. So in some ways it's unstructured, in some ways it is. Like I do pay attention to like what I'm running, like out of the Grand Canyon. And for example, that's a good way for me to measure up where I'm at fitness wise. I feel like is how fast I can climb out the Grand Canyon. And I'm not a guy that goes ballistic in training either. So it's kind of like, as long as I know that I'm always going, you know, 90-95% on that climb in the Canyon, I can kind of stack myself up against past fitness pretty well, I think. But yeah, you know, with working, and I work an odd schedule, I'm not working the same days each week. It's kind of just like, I feel like I have to just be flexible in like, you know, my body doesn't care if it's a Wednesday and I need the schedule calls for a workout that day. My body, you know, when my body's tired, I run easy. And when my body's feeling good, I try and get out for a harder run. But I do shoot for mileage goals. I do shoot for like trying to get in a certain number of feet of climbing in per week and structure it that way, but kind of fit my workouts in where my body feels it's up to it.
Was this an all or nothing proposition in terms of Western States? Like if it didn't work out on this day, in your mind, do you think you would have just said, I'm not going to bother chasing Western and maybe just continue?
Yeah, I think I would have had to. And that's why I was like, kind of just told myself, no, you're racing Black Canyon no matter what. So just because other stuff. So with North Face, I got an automatic qualifier for the IAU World Trail Running Championships in May in Spain. And that's going to be another big kind of key race for me. And so yeah, it's just anything else. If this didn't work out, Georgia Death Race, I think would have been too close. And then Lake Sonoma is like only a month away from this race in Spain. So it was kind of wasn't all or nothing. It was like, you know, if you screwed up at Black Canyon, I think you're just going to be forced to not run states. So yeah, I had all this in the back of my head while at the same time being like, well, don't put too much pressure on yourself. But I think I kind of inadvertently did. So, but I don't know. I was happy it worked out.
So race day morning, you wake up. What's the feeling right there? Are you feeling good for the day, or is there doubt?
Yeah, no, there was some doubt for sure. But yeah, waking up that morning, like I'd had some good runs that week. I'd kind of set up my work schedule. I worked 3 days in a row before North Face, and that was kind of a lot. I felt like I split them up a little bit. I did like What did I do? I think I did Monday, Tuesday, Thursday. I think the ideal for me would have been Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, but I just wasn't able to schedule that way. So this worked out pretty well. So just having that schedule, I basically just like, I went to work on those 3 days, and then the other days it was like I'd go for my run and then hang out in bed or just like not leave the house, which is, you know, kind of boring, I think, for you know, to most people. But I wanted to prioritize running well at this race. So I just kind of restricted myself to taking it easy that week and was feeling good. But there were some nerves on race morning for sure. But yeah, I don't know. It's like any ultra. You start running and like those first 10 miles, you're like, oh, you know, it's just one foot in front of the other. I can do this. So mile 40 was a different story. But
Now, at the start of the race, were you part of the lead pack right off the bat? And
yeah,
when you're part of the lead, do you have the pressure to set the pace, or are you allowing someone else to set the pace?
Yeah. So Eric Sensiman and I, a good friend of mine here in Flag, you know, we both wanted to qualify for Western States. And so we kind of agreed to work together. But I honestly, he was running a little quicker than I wanted to in the beginning. So he kind of set the pace for the first little bit. The first, like, 12 miles on that course is just like all downhill. It's a big descent. But it's such a big descent that, like, even though the paces, I think we were like in the 640s, but it's like, I don't know, when it's that far downhill, I think you kind of can't get too wrapped up in pace and just kind of have to go by feel. But yeah, the two of us, we were running in a pack for probably the first 5 miles, and the two of us kind of separated and we're kind of clicking off things together. And, yeah, it was feeling good. So,
now, after last year, you had a chance to correct one of the few missteps that you might have had in 2017. What are the different challenges this course provides, and what about, was weather a factor?
Yeah, I mean, last year weather was a huge factor. It was just a disaster. It was freezing. It was muddy. They rerouted the course because the rivers were flooded. So it was just out and back last year. This year it was like perfect weather. Couldn't complain with that at all. It was really nice weather. But yeah, I that's kind of the unpredictability, I think, of like Arizona deserts in the winter. Is like, it can, you know, it can be rainy. It can be snowing, like where the start is, it's like pretty close to 5,000 feet. So, I mean, it wouldn't be out of the question to have snow on race morning. But yeah, it was pretty cold at the start. I think it was in the 30s. And then by afternoon, it was in the 70s. So like, yeah, kind of a big swing. So wearing like gloves and stuff in the morning, and then like wanting to take my singlet off in the afternoon, getting doused down at every aid station. So, but yeah, and then just footing on the course isn't, you know, like comparing to the other Golden Ticket race I've run, like Lake Sonoma, it's so different. It's like Lake Sonoma is butter smooth the whole 50 miles. Whereas like this is like rocky, like pretty classic Arizona desert, saguaros, like everything has like, it's either sharp or it's got like stickers or something that's like evolved to like try and hurt things around it. So yeah, no, everything on the course is pretty, you know, the footing is just tough, but not a ton of like big climbs or anything. But honestly, sometimes the downhill for me can be a little rougher than uphill, just beating up your quads. So trying to kind of rein it in early on when you're feeling good and it's such a steep downhill was important to me.
Now, did it take a psychological toll on you when things started going wrong for Eric? Because now you've mentioned these guys are really tight. He's went into this race.
Yeah.
You're working together and all of a sudden you're seeing one of your best friends, their days going south. How, I mean, are you able to turn that side off?
Yeah, for sure. And like, luckily he didn't, it wasn't like he totally hit a wall. He kind of, you know, we were moving really well together the first 20 miles. He made a joke to me after the race. He was like, so what did you think when like I started falling off of you and like we weren't running fast? And I don't know. He just started kind of falling off. And I was like, you know, looking at my watch, just thinking like, I don't think this pace is anything ridiculous. So, but yeah, I mean, psychologically, I left out too that he was sick. Like he got sick 2 days before race day. And so that was a huge factor, I think, for him dropping. And we kind of knew going in that things might be tough for him. So I really didn't read into it too much, honestly. It was more just like, oh man, that sucks for him that, you know, he might not be having such a good day. And like, I don't know. I was kind of analyzing myself a bit too, because it's like 42 miles to run by yourself is a lot. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I just didn't try my best through those middle miles, make sure everything felt comfortable. And wasn't straining too much, but I don't think I thought about it too much, but more just super bummed for Eric than anything. I think he'll get that ticket at Lake Sonoma. I really do. I think he's in good shape and will roll later this season, but it was kind of a bummer to see him not having a great day.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about his chances at Lake Sonoma. Now, You mentioned mile 40. That's when things start getting a little tough.
Yes.
Yeah.
Talk us through that. What's going on?
Yeah, I could see my crew at mile 19, mile 37, and mile 51. And so kind of big gaps, not coming in at 37 when I saw them there, felt pretty good still. Things were still clicking along pretty well, but the next, it was weird. Like, I left that aid station feeling great. And then 3 miles later, it was like a pretty low point. I think around 41 was just like, oh man, I feel terrible. There's a pretty good climb out there, and it started getting kind of warm. But I think that's pretty typical in 100K, is like, and even in a 50 mile, like right around mile 40 is always where there's like kind of a lot of doubt. You know, you're a long way from the finish still. And it's like, oh man, I'm hurting pretty bad right now, and I've got, 3 hours of running left. Hit that aid station at 37. We crossed another river at the bottom of this valley, and then started this probably the longest climb on the course. I think you go up, nothing crazy, but you go up for 3 miles. I think it's a few hundred feet per mile, like 300. Yeah, probably 300 feet per mile. So really nothing crazy, but not great footing. It was just, no one was around it, which was kind of a good thing and a bad thing. It was kind of like, well, I'm not like being contested at this point, but at the same time, it's like, it'd be nice just to sink in behind somebody and just like not think,
Are you getting updates as that's going on? Are people telling you your next competitors, X amount of minutes behind you?
Yeah, I guess. So at 37, I had some updates. From then on, I guess my lead doubled from there. So like, I thought I was having a really bad stretch, but I think it's kind of one of those classic cases of like, you feel internally like, oh man, I'm going backwards, I'm hurting so bad. But it's kind of like everyone else is running the same terrain, and it's going the same way for everybody else too. And so I think everyone was having a rough time there, but yeah, I was getting a few updates. It was like, but they all come in delayed when you're leading, just because you don't have any intel on like what's behind you until you hit the next aid station. But yeah, so I don't know. At one point, I knew I had like 15 minutes, and like you get up on these ridges and you can see for miles and miles. So had a pretty good idea that I had a good lead. But for me in the past, it's kind of been all or nothing. It's like, man, the wheels, either they completely blow off, or they, I'm able to really knock it out of the park. And so it was kind of good, honestly, to have like a tough day where I, didn't totally blow up like it did last year.
I'm wondering if it would be a strategy, or if it would be a poor strategy for a crew person to do this, but to lie to the runner and say, hey, you got someone on your ass. Like right now, you got someone's right behind you. They're gaining ground. I don't know if that would demoralize the runner, or if that would be a good thing to get you to wake up.
Jim did do that at North Face. He told me at mile 40, was it 40, 41 or 42? He's like, hey man, you got 4 minutes. You got to get out of here and you got to keep moving. And really, I think I had like 7 or 8. It was whatever it was. It was double what Jim told me, but it was good. I mean, and Jim's really good. Like a lot of the guys that were crewing me that day, Jim and Jared Hazen and Eric, after he dropped and came to help out, like they're just really good at reading the situation. Like if I'm really hurting, like I don't need to hear that, like I don't need to hear that my lead is shorter than it is. Mm-hmm. Whereas like on a day like North Face, when you got a little more in the reserve and things are clicking, it's like, it's kind of good to hear it's shorter than it actually is. Cause it just, you get even more out of yourself and dig that much deeper. So
you mentioned, having a tough day was a good thing there. Mental toughness has come up on the show recently. If I asked your friends to rank your mental toughness on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being pretty damn mentally tough, what do you think they'd say about you?
Oh man, I don't know. That's a good question.
Or was this one of the biggest challenges you've had to get through mentally as well?
Last year, just to finish, was like the probably one of the bigger challenges. It was okay. Cold. It was wet. I was walking and like my legs were cramping. And so like, it was like even stepping wrong would just cause my leg to completely lock up. So that I think was a bigger mental challenge. And I've had bigger, huge mental challenges in the Grand Canyon before, just kind of on training stuff. But, oh man, I think Jim is very mentally tough. You don't see Jim crack too often. So Jim might be a 10, and I don't know, then maybe they put me around like an 8. I don't know, 8 or 9. I like to think I'm mentally tough, but you know, I like to think that I'm mentally tough in the right situations. You know, I think being too out to prove a point in training can really get you into trouble. And so I don't think I'm hard headed when it comes to training. Like if I need to shut it down, I'm going to shut it down. But come on race day, you know, I've dropped out of one race in my life. I hate dropping out. So I want to just grit through it and get to the finish. But yeah, that's an interesting question. I'll have to ask them myself sometime.
Just to follow up on it, we had Mako on here the one time, and he said that he doesn't like taking DNFs because he believes it trains your body to do that result again. Like once you open that door, it becomes, sure. Do you have the same philosophy?
I do. Yeah. I think a lot of runners do. I mean, not everyone, but yeah, it's like, you know, if you're truly committed to just sticking it out and you know you're going to get to the finish no matter what, it makes you think more analytically about moves you're making in races and like, is this pace sustainable? And you know, because if you have this easy button, just like the eject button, it's just like, I feel like you take risks that aren't always as smart, and it's like, well, if it doesn't work out, I can just drop. And I don't know. I think it's just good for your headspace just to not get in that habit of dropping. You know, I think in other aspects of life too, it's like,
right.
You know, I don't want to be the guy that quits when it gets hard. So yeah, I do. And you see that a lot with runners that, you know, they drop one and then it kind of becomes a habit. So just never wanted to open up that door. I dropped at TNF last year while I was in school and I still like, I hate that, but I don't know, different life situation at the time. So.
All right. So what was the mile marker when you realized that there was a pretty good chance you were going to win this race?
Probably like 54. I came into 51 thinking like I was going to have to hike it in. I was in a really rough spot. Yeah, no, I was pretty banged up there. And I think it was just a matter of like not staying quite as on top of hydration and nutrition, kind of letting that lag a little bit. And like my crew is just, they're great. Like Jim and Jared and my girlfriend Maddie, like all of them were just like, hey, let's just take a minute and just sit and just recharge and kind of get out of this aid station feeling good. And that's exactly what I did. And so, but yeah, I knew there was a big climb right after mile 51 out of that last aid station. I'd see my crew at 12 or 11 and a half miles to the finish, big climb. And so I knew it was going to be tough, but I was kind of worried that I'd be hiking a lot of that. But really just had, you know, just put one step in front of the other and the legs kind of started to come back around 54, 55. And it was like, okay, I think I can pull this off.
All right. So I have to comment on this, after the race, you looked like that race took a lot out of you, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Yeah, it did.
And in this,
absolutely. It was kind of, yeah, there were no smiles. It was like, give me a chair. I need to sit down.
Well, what I'm getting at is, you know, in this race that you won a chance to win, to compete in a longer race, a 100-mile race.
Right.
Did it give you any hesitation in stepping up to that distance after like having this experience and just going through the different challenges that you did?
You know, not really, actually. I knew that day would be tough. Like I knew Black Canyon would be really tough. If I had to run 100 miles, like in, you know, with things feeling the way they were, that would have been really rough. Mm-hmm. I think I would have been super, super conservative at the start if I were kind of feeling going into Western States like I was at this race. But I kind of know how to prepare myself to be feeling good. And it was just kind of some chance things on this that got me to the line feeling a little underprepared and a little overtrained. And so really, I think if I can get to the line feeling like I did going into Transvolcania, going into West or going into North Face or, you know, the Sky Race I did in the fall, if I can go into Western States prepared like I was for those races, I know that I'm going to be, you know, physically ready and mentally capable to fight through and put up a good result for 100 miles.
Were you surprised you won by 41 minutes?
Yeah,
that's a pretty big win. I mean, that's not like a little.
I was, but
could have hiked it in and probably won.
I don't know about that, but yeah, I mean, it was surprising. I think like just 100K in the desert, even if the weather is good, like the rocky footing and the, you know, just the sun exposure at Western States, at least, you know, it's 100 degrees, but at least there's shade. Like out there, it's like you're exposed, the sun's beating down on you, and I just think it was tough for everyone.
Yeah, even though what I said there, I didn't mean to, I wasn't trying to diss you, but even at your worst, as Glenn said earlier, you still looked pretty damn handsome in that picture, Glenn. It's like, epic picture.
Oh, thanks, guys. Yeah, no, I didn't take that as a... I completely agree with Ruff. You know, anytime you just go to a place you didn't think you could go mentally, it's like it just fries you mentally more than anything. You're just like, man, that was hard. I need to sit down, take a breather.
I wish I looked that rough. I'd probably have like 10 more kids or my wife if I looked that rough, man.
We need some tips.
Yeah. Do you follow afterwards? Like, do you go on social media and look at like I Run Far's coverage or what people are saying? Because during the race, Andy Jones Wilkins, he's pretty well known in the ultra community. Yeah, he was saying like, oh no, it looks like he basically was questioning maybe the wheels were falling off. Then you have Sage Kennedy jump in and say, no, it's the way the course is set up. You know, it's downhill. Yeah. So you're going to see this thing. Do you look and follow to see what people are saying afterwards?
No, not really. I mean, occasionally I'll hop on and like look through. But this one I didn't. I think I heard from some friends that like the commentary is pretty colorful for this one. But yeah, I mean, in AJW, it's, you know, he's a strong personality, but yeah, I mean, I think he can be, you know, your biggest critic and your biggest fan all in the same, like in the same race, which is great, ultimately it's good for the sport. So, but yeah, the course does run that way. It's cool that Sage, and Sage's course record, like props to him. Cause it's, that course it's just deceivingly tough, you know, it runs like that. The beginning is so fast and the footing, it's like the footing's better. It's steeper in the start. And then like the climbs come late and the bad footing comes late and it throws everything at you right late in the race. So
you mentioned nutrition and hydration.
Yeah.
And do you consider that a strength of yours or something you need to work on going into this 100-mile race you got coming up?
I have considered that a strength of mine in the past. And I hope it continues that way. I know Jim, like when he threw up last year, I think that kind of got into his head. It was like, oh man, like once you throw up, and I think physiologically too, he kind of had struggles there for a little bit. He's fine now, but I think for a little bit, it's like, you know, your stomach's just a little less settled. I think, you know, your body eventually gets to a point where it just rejects some of that stuff in a race. And, but yeah, I mean, usually I'm shooting for like 400 calories an hour, 350. Well, usually like 400. And I've been able to handle that pretty well. I mean, I can eat. So I've always had a big appetite and that doesn't change in races. But yeah, I think fueling is crucial during races to get it. You know, it's everything, honestly. I mean, I notice when my legs go downhill, it's like, well, have you been eating or not? And more often than not, it's like, well, I haven't been eating enough, so there's your problem. But yeah, Cliff's performance lines worked well for me. Their gels and their blocks have worked really well. And yeah, I can really condensed calories, so I can get in a lot and stay on top of it that way.
All right, Tim, I got something in my notes, and it says,
"Yeah,
peeing story." So I'm watching the Coconita, the Coconita Cowboys. Instagram story, and your boys, Rivers, Poozy, and Sensiman, are busting your chops. But one of the guys says, man, Tim's got it down like an art, apparently. He can run.
Yeah, no, they poke fun at me, but I'm like, you know, like I asked Jim, I was like, well, what are you doing during races? You know, because they're giving me a hard time for peeing while I'm running. And he's like, well, I just stop. And it's like, man, if I stopped, I pee a lot. Like, I don't know what the capacity of my bladder is, but it's not high. And so if I stopped every time I had to pee, I'd be stopped as much as I was running. So, yeah, I've kind of gotten it down to an art and a science in over the last year where I can pee pretty efficiently. Mike Hermsmeyer, a good friend of mine and Jim's, was taking photos of the race, and up on a ridgeline, I pull the opening of my shorts up. I don't like pull my waistband down. And so I pull my shorts up and I'm like, oh shoot, there's somebody up on that ridge. And thankfully it was just Mike, but he was like, I get up there and he's like, dude, you had your hand on your junk, you ruined the shot. It's like, man, I didn't see you there. When you gotta pee, you gotta pee, you know? But yeah, I've got it down pretty good, I think. But I mean, other guys do it too. I mean, some guys don't, but during North Face, I was pleasantly surprised that I wasn't the only one in that lead pack that had it down. So
it's like a danger zone, man. I don't know if I'd want to be behind you guys.
You gotta watch out. That pack can't be too closely knit together. Otherwise things are going to get dirty.
One of the cool stories coming out of this race, I think, is that Eric ended up coming back and crewing you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is a lot about a friend, because a lot of times, you know, it meant a lot to him. I'm sure we haven't had the pleasure of talking to him, but I know following him, it was one of the things, you know, he was really, you know, he wanted to do well in this race, but for him to help you, I think that's real cool.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. I mean, Eric's become one of my best friends here in Flag, and he's a great athlete, and he's just been a great friend to me. And so, I mean, I don't know, I wouldn't have faulted him at all if it's like, you know, it's like a rough day, I'm sick, like, just let's pack our bags and let's get out of here. But no, I mean, he's out there after, you know, getting up at the crack of dawn and feeling like terrible. And, you know, he's like one of the first people to greet me into the aid station at Table Mesa at mile 51. So that was pretty cool. Yeah, it was pretty cool to see him there. And yeah, he's always been, all the races that he's been at, he's been the one that's been able to like lift my spirits better than anyone else. He's just got a fun personality, and he's always got really good advice. He had a few choice words for the climb that was coming up, but basically just telling me that I could handle it. And just really got me up on a high coming out of that last aid station.
That'd be a real neat story if him and Jared could get the tickets at Lake Sonoma. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I think they will. I'm feeling optimistic.
I saw a cool picture of the Cowboys with Courtney DeWalter afterwards.
Yeah.
And man, talk about a rock star. She finished in second place.
Oh, I know.
She didn't even really have to do this race. She already had her gold.
I couldn't believe she was out there.
Man, yeah. Me neither. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, no, I to see her out there, and it was really cool to meet her too. She's tough as nails and so nice and positive and just a really cool person. It was really cool to get to meet her, and I wish her continued success. She's done so well in the ultra scene so far, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Yeah, we had her on a couple of weeks ago, and we got into a big debate over structured workouts versus no structure, because she's somebody who, she does her own thing. She came on here, said she goes by feel every day, and what she feels, she does. So it's interesting to see.
Awesome.
I guess what we all agreed on is, you know, you can get, you know, that good result, but there's a lot of different methods to attack it. Some people thrive with structure, and other people, structure, you know, hinders them and makes them not want to run.
For sure.
That's what makes me really curious and intrigued by Tim's approach, because, you know, there's a lot of guys out there that might say, oh man, I need 130 miles as my peak week. And you know, Tim, you haven't had to do that. You've had amazing success so far. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I mean, do you feel like as long as it keeps going this way, you don't even really have to consider that, or like you said, kill yourself in training, you know?
Yeah, no, I, it's something I've always thrived off high mileage. In college, I got up as high as like 120 and 125, and I felt like I did really well at that. But it's kind of like, you know, as long as I'm doing this lifestyle or I'm working full time and training, I got to look at like the long term picture and like what's going to get me the most miles most efficiently, like over the course of the year. You know, like I did 110, 115 miles a week before Black Canyon last year, and it was the best stretch of training of my ultra career, I feel like. But then, you know, if you're running 50 miles a week for a couple months afterward, and, you know, I'm just trying to keep doing what's most sustainable for me right now. And I think like 100 has kind of been my sweet spot for this, but I would love to be, you know, I really do think I could run a little, you know, I could run faster if I could get a little higher, maybe not 130, but you know, 120s I think would be good, especially for the 100-mile distance. And I might try and kind of experiment a little bit on that and creep up a little higher, probably no 130s, but try and get over 100 for a few weeks. I think would be really good going into Western States, but we'll see.
Now, I texted you after the race, congratulate you, but also thanking you, because on our show here a week earlier, I gave my shocking statement. I said, I predict Tim Frerichs will win Western States. And I kind of was met with, well, no, he's not even in Western States yet. So I was like,
yeah,
no pressure. I'm just saying, but you did the first part of my prediction. So I thank you. So this is why I don't look a complete schmuck.
Put me in the hot seat. Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that though. You know, sometimes you got to put a little pressure on, and yeah, I'm happy I didn't. You know, I got you through the first part of that wager, at least.
The first step of it. All right. Yeah. With the race behind you and Western ahead of you, you said,
yeah,
you told me before we went on air here that you were going to do some, you know, you're going to recover here. What's your recovery? Yeah. What's your recovery period? Do you do some foam rolling and do you just kind of take it easy?
Yeah. For a few days, it's like, I think you just need a mental break more than anything too. Just like, you know, I'm just not going to do running related things, like not even foam rolling or stretching or anything. Like,
right.
So like for a few couple days, 2-3 days afterwards, I'll just end up not doing anything running related. But then like now I did like some lower body, like leg lifts and stuff like that today. And just kind of some, like foam rolling and stuff like that. But typically like 7 days, no running at least for me after like a big race like this, like 50 miles, 100K, usually a week at least, but that's worked well for me. And then, I'll probably kind of start to gradually get back into things.
Is your work understanding, do you get to take time off after a race like this, or is it right back in the groove with work?
I kind of set my schedule up to where I didn't take any vacation days, but like worked at the beginning of last week and the end of this week. So yeah, that's been a good setup for me. I don't have to go straight back into work, but.
Now, what type of patients do you work with? What type of floor is it?
I'm on a step down floor, so it's like kind of post ICU. I think some hospitals call like progressive care unit is a similar type unit is what I'm on. But yeah, at our hospital it is in the critical care cluster. So
has any patient ever recognized you? Like, holy crap, I got Tim Frerichs taking care of me. Like, that'd be pretty neat. I think
that's part of that's being in Flagstaff. When that happens, it's kind of funny. I had one patient's family member like kind of wide eyed, and it's just so funny to me because it just, you know, it's like it's still kind of, I'm just kind of new to the sport still, and I don't know, in my eyes there's you know, there's nothing special about me. I'm pretty average, ordinary dude, but
humble man.
I really do believe, I don't know, yeah.
Eric told us that you were bragging about how great you are after that race.
Yeah, right. Oh, man. I was not bragging about anything after that race.
Tim, we thank you. You've been so gracious with your time. You're a little under the weather, so we appreciate you joining us tonight, man. We love you. We were going to be rooting for you at Western States. It's been a pleasure talking to you, brother.
Guys. Yeah, it's been a pleasure talking to you guys, too. I always love joining you on the show. Thanks for your time. Thanks for letting me join you. It's been great.
I've got my Go Tim Go shirt, man. I'm ready for Western States.
Nice. I'm excited. It's going to be a fun one.
Thanks for listening to the Negative Splits podcast. If you'd like to help the show, head over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a rating or review. If you'd like to contact the show, send us an email at negativesplitspodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter. We're the Negative Splits. And if you're on Strava, why not step up to the challenge and join the Negative Splits Podcast Club?